All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. It's the first day of June, June 1st, 2026. Our top story this morning, it's not a huge story because the numbers behind it are small, but it's a very symbolic story. And, you know, there is a lesson in here about infinite money glitches, which are anything but infinite. Michael Saylor's strategy has sold Bitcoin. All right. They sold a little bit of Bitcoin. They sold 32 Bitcoin, to be precise. And, hey, that might be a lot of money to you or me, but 32 Bitcoin in the context of Strategy's remaining Bitcoin holdings of 843,706. Not even a drop in the bucket, all right? It's a drop in the river. It's a very small amount of Bitcoin. But why is he selling it? That this is important. He's using the proceeds to fund distributions from preferred stock, or Stretch, STRC. And that's the latest iteration of Saylor's infinite money glitch is Stretch, the perpetual yielding 11% strategy preferred stock, which are basically like, it's supposed to be like a Bitcoin bond. I don't even know what you'd call it. But, you know, he issues these shares. He uses the money from the sale of these shares to buy Bitcoin. And then he has to pay an 11% dividend on that, which means Bitcoin's price needs to go up forever, but he would still have to sell it in order to pay those distributions. And that's the thing about infinite money glitches is they're not infinite. And, you know, we're looking over at tech stocks. We're looking over at memory stocks, at Micron. We're looking at commercial real estate. There's a lot of things out there that people used to think were infinite money glitches that you can't ever lose money on. And that's usually right when things start to go south in a hurry. So, hey, maybe there's a lesson in there somewhere. Damned if I know. So that's going on this morning. The other big news, we've got oil is $2 to $3 higher, back around, right around the $90 level for WTI after another weekend of jawboning and missile barrages. Still no deal. We've been minutes away from a deal for about 2 months now. We'll probably still be minutes away from a deal a month from now. Over the weekend, Iran shot down a U.S. Predator drone. I didn't even know we still flew Predators. Apparently, the Army still does. They flew one of those down. The U.S. version said over international waters. The Iranian version said it was over Iranian airspace. It was over the Strait of Hormuz is what they shot it down at. So we retaliated. The U.S. blew up the missile site that launched targeted the drone. And then Iran retaliated for our retaliation. They launched ballistic missiles at Kuwait. Kuwaiti air defenses were active overnight. This is all as Israel and Hezbollah continue to escalate their tit for tat in Lebanon. But again, guys, you know, the deal has been minutes away for several months now. We've got this staring contest slash stalemate going on in the Strait of Hormuz, blockades on both sides. The calculus is Iran is punishing the whole world with higher oil prices, hoping that we blink. We are punishing Iran with a blockade, hoping they have to shut in their wells, which would be devastating economically. It is a war of economic attrition that is ongoing here. And, you know, as this is all going on, we had a rather, I still don't know what to make of this story, broke yesterday. The we'll call it the rumor that Iran's president Pezeshkian had resigned. And the reason we'll call it a rumor is because this was reported in a Western Iranian language or Persian language news outlet. It was reported. And of course, the Iranian government came out and said it's propaganda. But so the story goes, the Iranian president had requested to resign because the elected government had been excluded from vital decision making by the IRGC. And look, this has been rumored for several months now. We've had a lot of reporting to this effect. A lot of people wondering, hey, the people that we're negotiating with, can they even deliver on whatever we negotiate? Because the radicals are pretty much in charge since we killed most of the civilian leadership in Iran. And, you know, at the same time, you've got the Ayatollah of Disfigurola. He's out there. We haven't seen him at all since his father was killed. He's been basically this invisible supreme leader, a total puppet of the IRGC. And so, you know, some of the most effective propaganda, some of the most effective lies are based on a little bit of truth. And there's also a little bit of truth in every lie. So, look, is this story, which the Iranians are denying, that the president wanted to resign because the IRGC had taken over, is it truth? Is it propaganda? Is it rumor? It's all of the above. It doesn't matter. It just goes to show you the leadership vacuum that we have in Iran, or at least the civilian leadership vacuum, has led to the radicals seizing power, whether this story about the president wanting to resign is true or not. Meanwhile, we've got Exxon was out last week saying $150 crude oil was in the cards if this stalemate continues, which it looks like it's going to. We've got the chart of global oil reserves that says that is very much the case. And we'll also look at that chart, how fast it's falling, and see how much time do we have before that happens. We've got ships are also in short supply. This is interesting. Got an article in Bloomberg. VLCCs, very large crude carriers in particular, are in short supply for a number of reasons. We had the South Korean big shot was out buying up ships earlier this year. And then, of course, we had the conflict. We had a lot of carriers got stranded in the Gulf, or VLCC carriers got stranded in the Gulf. And now you've got a lot of oil is coming from the U.S. and, you know, Western sources all the way to the Pacific. Well, that's a much longer trip. So the same amount of oil flowing in a much longer trip, you need more tankers to do that. So we've got tanker rates have nearly doubled this year. And then I've got Craig Fuller from FreightWaves is out this morning talking about how trucking spot rates surged overnight, now at an all-time high. And according to Craig Fuller, this is not just diesel prices. Diesel prices have actually come down over the last couple of days, even though spot rates have skyrocketed. So we'll talk about what's going on with trucking rates and what might be driving that. The world of logistics is a hot mess right now. We've got NVIDIA is out with a new PC chip for laptops. It looks like this chip is basically being tailor-made to run inference loads, i.e. local AI machines. Which is kind of interesting that NVIDIA would be doing this, because if we do get widespread adoption of this chip, they would be cannibalizing their own data center business, which is 95% of their revenue now. But we've got stocks like Intel and AMD are selling off on this news this morning. Dr. Michael Burry was out on Substack late last week, and he had a post. It was an excellent article that it's basically exactly what I've been warning about for years, although he used a name I've never heard of. Valor was the name here. And it's stop me if you've heard this one. It's this special purpose vehicle that was set up by XAI and NVIDIA and the private credit firm Apollo in order to hide the debt and the depreciating assets of XAI's GPUs off balance sheet while NVIDIA buys their own product through circular financing. Before I read this article, I had never heard the name Valor before, but it is exactly the freaking scenario I've been pounding the table on for years. And all I can say is nobody saw this coming. And last but not least, Bloomberg has an article about Jerome Powell this morning. And they're calling it the Fed chair who fought back. And what they're trying to do is make Jerome Powell's legacy as the Fed chair who stood the ground against the big bad Donald Trump. And, oh, Fed, my Fed independence. And, I got a lot I could say about that. But, for now, let's just summarize that as bullshit. That is not how Jerome Powell should be remembered as Fed chair. I'll give you a couple of my ideas on how I think Jerome Powell should be remembered, what his legacy actually is. Anyways, guys, we got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with us melon heads, because we do this every business day. And right now, the S&P 500, it's just gone negative. That's interesting. What happened moments ago? I don't know. Something happened moments ago. We are in the midst of a big red candle here. I'm gonna fire off a message real quick and see if I can get my man Mish on that one while the show goes on. Bear with me one second. I don't normally do this. Why market dropping? We're down 8 points, 0.12% lower here. We must have had some kind of news. I don't know if this is my gut tells me Middle East or something to that effect. But yeah, stocks just went negative. We've got the Dow is also dropping down 75 points. It was several hundred points higher earlier today, off by 0.12%. And the NASDAQ lower by 50 points, 0.16%. Let's just bring up CNBC real quick, see if we get that red ticker across the screen. Doesn't look like anything right away is jumping here. No, nothing new. Let me see if we got any economic data at 9. No, we didn't have any data came out at 9. Let's just clear this and set it to the United States. See if I can find the source of that red candle in real time. ISM, PMI, no, that's not it. I don't know what it was, to be honest with you guys. I don't know why we're dropping all of a sudden, but something caused that big red candle. All right, let's look over at the U.S. dollar. Okay, the dollar is a little bit stronger here. All right, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this has something to do with the Middle East. If we've got the dollar strengthening while stocks fall here, 99.17, that's higher by 26 basis points this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are going pretty much nowhere here. The 30-year Treasury, 4.978%. That's lower by a point and a half. The 10-year yield is at 4.474, higher by 2 points and change. The 2 years at 4.029, that's a point and a half higher. And the 1 month is relatively unchanged, down a fraction of a point, 3.688. Okay, I just thank you very much, Mish, who just came in with this update. Iran has said bad faith negotiations are all stop. So as I suspected when I saw the dollar chart, the reason why we're seeing stocks fall in the dollar spike, it does have to do with the Middle East. So apparently we're not minutes away from a deal where we have been for several days. Okay, that is breaking news here. All right, so let's move on a little bit. Well, and again, we'll get to Iran and some of the things that were happening. But for now, the big story this morning, Bitcoin, $71,821, off by $1,700. Bitcoin has had a rough couple of days here. Really, since the middle of May, it started this sell-off. It hasn't been that brutal, but we have gone from about 82 down to now under 72. But it's been the death of a thousand cuts, if you will. It's been a very slow, gradual sell-off. Now, Bitcoin has been in this consolidation pattern since, I don't know, what, about January here? This little uptrend, this was all the issuance of Stretch and Michael Saylor's strategy, buying shares with the proceeds from Stretch. And now this morning, we got this little red guy here. That's because of the headline where Strategy had to sell 32 Bitcoin, a very modest amount, a very tiny amount, barely a drop in the bucket, but a symbolic milestone. That Strategy is selling Bitcoin. And now we're selling off here. And Strategy is going to have to keep selling Bitcoin because they have to pay this dividend forever, which I'm told is a very long time. And look, guys, we're still in the middle of Bitcoin winter. We have at least 4 or 5 months of Bitcoin winter left. And I think we probably could see another big leg down like we had these two big legs down last year. I think we've got at least one more in store for this cycle, possibly two. And I just want to zoom out a little bit because I have a couple of levels marked on the chart here that kind of stuck out at me that I think we want to watch. These red lines here, 74.4 was one of the resistance levels that we just broke down below. 49,000 was one possible level I had marked as a bottom for this cycle. That was the high after the Bitcoin ETFs came out. That was the high that we reached immediately leading up to the halving here. So that I figured would be a little bit of a resistance level if we get down to that level. Also, during the August panic over the yen carry trade in 2024, that was also the level that acted as support there. So I figured that 49,000 level was a good target for a bottom for this cycle. If that level didn't hold, the next level I was eyeballing was around 25,000, which you could see that acted as support during the prior Bitcoin winter. So those are the levels I'm watching. I really don't think we've seen the bottom for this cycle. I don't know that we get into this lower half of the band here. I think 49,000 probably holds unless we get somebody really big blows up on the scale of like an FTX or a Terra Luna collapse. But in the meantime, you know, typically you don't see the bottom in crypto winter until about, what was it, 75 to 77 weeks before the next halving. And that puts us somewhere around October of this year. So there are several months of winter remaining here. So I still own Bitcoin. I'm not trading around this or anything, but I think it's got a long way to fall still. And here's the story that's driving that one this morning. Strategy sells Bitcoin for first time since 2022. The stock is sliding. That's important to note. They have sold Bitcoin before 2022. During last winter was the last time that they sold. Strategy's executive chairman, Michael Saylor, once swore the company would never sell Bitcoin. The world's largest holder of the cryptocurrency has since reversed that stance, recently executing its first strategic sale. On Monday, Strategy disclosed that it sold 32 Bitcoin in the period of May 26 to May 31st at an aggregate price of $2.5 million, or roughly $75,699 apiece. The price of Bitcoin has fallen 2% over the past 24 hours to $71,960, according to CoinDesk. Strategy stock, meanwhile, has slid 4.6% percent in pre-market trading Monday. The proceeds from the sale are expected to be used to fund distributions on preferred stock, Strategy said. That's that STRC or the stretch. Again, they have to do that forever now. They got to pay those distributions. So if Bitcoin, whether it goes up or goes down, they're going to need cash to pay those distributions, which means they will have to be constantly selling Bitcoin now. The transaction is the first of its kind, seeing as Strategy last sold Bitcoin back in 2022 solely for tax purposes. It comes just weeks after CEO Phong Le asserted that the company would sell crypto when it is advantageous to do so. And apparently it was advantageous to do so over the last few days. So looking at Strategy shares, they're down 5.5% ahead of the opening bell, $150.33. Yeah, infinite money glitches are definitely not infinite, guys. They may seem like it. And, you know, uninformed, low information crypto bros on X will probably assure you that it can only ever go up. But that's very much not the case, as we're seeing this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold, $4,472 for spot gold below $4,500. We're seeing gold sell off here, down $70 or 1.5% on this recent news. You know, gold trading in opposite directions is oil. Seen that a little bit. We've got a stronger dollar this morning, so that stronger dollar is going to be a headwind for gold. But it is unusual to see gold selling off during risk-off moves. But we have seen that behavior a little bit over the last couple of months. Since this Iran conflict began, gold has been trading somewhat like a risk asset. That's made me a little bit nervous. Spot silver is also down a little bit this morning, 74.68, off by 63 cents, or about 0.75% lower. But I still like this shiny for the long term. Copper is up 1.8%. Platinum is up 0.1%. Palladium is down about 1%, and crude oil, now we're up almost almost $5 here, 5.4%, $92.04 for WTI crude. So yeah, about another $2 just since we started recording here. Oil is moving higher on this news that apparently the Iranians have walked away from the table. All right, so maybe there was some truth to that rumor about the president, you know, not wanting to stay in the job because the IRGC was in charge. Here's the oil chart here. Again, guys, you know, this jawboning cycle, I've been shaking my head, just like not really understanding why has the market been falling for this endless blind optimism every, you know, seems like every Friday. Oh, we're minutes away from a deal, and then we kill a bunch of people over the weekend, but by Monday we're talking again. It's always seemed very fake to me. I understand why they're doing it. The jawboning is keeping oil prices suppressed, and that's part of the military strategy here, is to minimize the impact of the Hormuz Strait closure on Western economies while we give the blockade time to work and inflict harm on Iran. I just don't know why Western traders have been going along with it, but they have. Not working out so well this morning. Obviously, we got a decent-sized green candle here with oil up a couple of bucks on this news. Excuse me. Over the weekend, U.S. bombs Iranian military sites, and Kuwait is hit by drone and missile fire. Again, we were so close to a deal that we were shooting missiles and drones at each other. United Arab Emirates, the United States said Monday that it bombed radar and drone sites in Iran after Tehran shot down an American drone over the weekend. Iran then said it launched a strike of its own, and Kuwait reported incoming fire. The nominal ceasefire between Iran and the U.S. has been repeatedly tested with such back-and-forth attacks. Even as officials from both countries try to negotiate an end to the war, it's not clear how close they are to a deal, and there's always the risk that an attack could derail those talks. Well, it looks like that actually happened while I was talking here. Let's see. The U.S. Military Central Command said it carried out strikes in Iran on Saturday and on Sunday around the city of Geruk on Keshem Island. The measured and deliberate strikes occurred in response to aggressive Iranian actions that included the shootdown of a U.S. MQ-1 drone, that's the Predator, that was operating over international waters, Central Command said. U.S. fighter aircraft swiftly responded by eliminating Iranian air defenses, a ground control station, and two one-way attack drones that posed clear threats to ships transiting regional waters. Kuwait said its air defenses opened fire early Monday morning to intercept incoming drone and missile fire. Around the same time, Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard said it responded to an American attack without saying where, likely referring to the attack on Kuwait. In a statement carried out by state-run IRNA news agency, the Guard said that U.S. forces had targeted a telecommunications tower. Kuwait is home to the U.S. Army Central, the Mideast Forward Command for the Army. While the U.S. Air Force no longer flies the MQ-1 Predator, the U.S. Army still does. So they probably targeted the base that that drone took off from, is what it seems like, after the U.S. retaliated for its shootdown. All right, and then we got this one. Again, this one had me scratching my head yesterday. And this recent news about the negotiation stopping, that's got me believing maybe there was a little sliver of truth to this one. Did Iran's president Masoud Pezeshkian resign over disagreement with the IRGC? A fact check. This added to months of reports claiming tensions between the government and the Islamic Republic's military security institutions. This isn't NDTV world. This is an Indian news outlet here. So it's going to be relatively insulated from both the Western and the Iranian propaganda influences, is why I chose to go with this one here. Because again, guys, you do have propaganda on both sides, so it's hard to really know what's going on. Iranian authorities have dismissed a report claiming Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian has sought to step down in protest over the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps' unchecked dominance in Tehran's wartime decision-making. The rebuttal came after UK-based Iran International reported that Pezeshkian had submitted his resignation to Supreme Leader Mojtaba Khamenei, saying that the elected government has effectively been excluded from vital decision-making processes in the country and that the vacuum created by this situation has enabled hardline factions within the IRGC to take control of affairs. Citing an informed government source, the IRGC-affiliated Tasnim News Agency reported that the president had not resigned and continued to carry out his duties. Let's see. Separately, Syed Mehdi Tabatabai, I'm probably mispronouncing that, the deputy head of communications and information at the president's office also dismissed the Iran International report in a post on X and said that Pezeshkian would not step back from serving the people. The rumor mongering by the disreputable foreign network is a continuation of previous ridiculous media games. They have published their own wishful thinking in place of reality, the guy's post read. This is the same guy who posts AI-generated videos of American aircraft carriers sinking or F-35s the size of Godzilla supposedly being shot down over Tehran. So take that with a grain of salt as well. But Iran International, citing sources, claimed that Pezeshkian had submitted an official letter of resignation to the office of the Supreme Leader, in which he claimed that under the IRGC's dominance and decision-making, he was unable to run the government and carry out his legal responsibilities. And for that reason, he was requesting to step down immediately. This added to months of reports claiming tensions between the government and the Islamic Republic's military security institutions. Earlier, a New York Times report claimed that a small elite band of men in senior positions, most of whom are current or former senior IRGC commanders, are guiding decision-making in Iran. And look, nobody has seen the Ayatollah since he had half his face and a leg blown off. And, you know, they've only released pre-written statements, very much a puppet of the IRGC at this point. So I don't know if this story was true or not, but I'll say the story is believable. Whether it's actually true, only history will determine that. But now we've got the latest that Iran apparently has gotten up and walked away from the table. Let's see, oil still 92 and a half here, up $4.90. So these gains appear to be holding. Now, ExxonMobil was warning last week. Exxon warns of $150 crude. Here are the supporting charts. And, you know, we had Exxon CEO was in the news basically saying inventory levels were dropping. This one is in mishtalk.com. This one's put out by Mish Shedlock. And what I really want to draw your attention to, he's got this chart here, which is basically global crude oil observed inventories. It's kind of an obscure statistic. This doesn't include all oil in the world, right? Like, I don't think this includes Chinese oil inventories. The Chinese are said to have up to 1 billion barrels of oil. But the Chinese are burning through their oil reserves right now because they have dropped their imports by about 4.5 million barrels per day. So while this may not be an all-encompassing statistic, the rate at which it's declining is, in my opinion, informative about what the whole world is seeing right now in the tank levels. And in particular, what Mish has zeroed in on here, and again, this is not my moderator, Mish. This is M-I-S-H, not M-Y-S-H. But Mish Shedlock has pointed out here, at the start of this conflict is when the line turns brown. And you can see we've gone from about 1.9 billion barrels to 1.78 billion barrels. So at the rate we're currently declining, which is about 4.3 million barrels per day, is the rate at which global crude and oil inventories are falling here. And that's roughly in line with the disruption that we've seen in the Middle East that has not been made up for by Saudi pipelines or increased U.S. production and other things like that. So the world is burning through about 4.3 million barrels per day of our reserves. We've got about 1.78 billion left. That means we've got about 411 days until zero. Now, don't look at that and be like, okay, we can do this for a year, because it's not like we're fine, we're fine, we're fine. Then the tank hits zero. Oh my God, we're screwed. Right? Prices rise as that falls. Right now, this endless stream of jawboning is suppressing that price movement. But as those inventory levels fall, more people are going to start watching the needles on those tanks versus what's coming out of Washington and what's coming out of Tehran. And again, you don't ever really get to zero, because as you approach zero, the price rises theoretically to infinity. And so you never actually get to the bottom of the tank, because the price goes up to the point where demand starts to get destroyed and that tank level stops falling. And you also can't really get to zero, because the very bottom of all these tanks is unusable soot and silt. So, you know, if there's 1.78 billion barrels in the tanks around the world, there's probably only about 1.75 billion usable barrels, because the bottom of the tanks is sludge that you actually can't make any use of. So I found this chart was pretty informative. We can keep this up anywhere between 250 and 400 days. Is what I'm getting here, because there's other charts out there, like the Japanese inventories. They've only got about 200 days worth of reserves. The rate the SPR is falling, we can go about 280, 290 days. But then you've also got commercial inventories on top of that. But again, it's not so much how many days until zero. It's the price is going to rise as those levels keep falling. And apparently, we're running low on ships also. Oil companies scramble for ships to secure transport, owner says. Oil companies are rushing to secure giant tankers to ensure they can transport barrels after the industry was upended by war and the largest vessel buying spree in a generation, the head of a ship owner said. Since the buying spree by South Korea's Sinokor Group, the rise in tanker earnings has been compounded by the Iran war, which has disrupted trade flows and geographically stretched out the global fleet. Benchmark tanker earnings began the conflict near $200,000 a day and have since almost doubled, though there's an industry debate about the true value of that market. Other officials at tanker companies said on a panel at the Athens event that they expect to see a longer-term rerouting of global oil flows as Asian importers seek to become less dependent on shipments from the Middle East. We're going to see a rebuilding of global crude oil flows once this situation normalizes, said Pankaj Khanna, CEO of Heidmar Maritime Holdings. That means more will come from the Atlantic into Asian markets. Well, that is a much longer trip. And if you have a longer trip, trying to maintain the same flow means you need more boats than you used to have. And so the rate for these renting these boats is going up. And apparently you have this South Korean big shot, Sinokor Group, started buying up crude tankers earlier this year before the war started. So that is adding to the shortage as well. So not just a shortage of oil, a shortage of boats capable of carrying them. And apparently we've got shortages on the road too. We got this one from Craig Fuller from Freight Waves at Freight Alley on X, which I highly recommend you follow Craig on Twitter. He's got great logistics information over at freightwaves.com. Major overnight surge on truckload spot rates to a new all-time high. Truckload van spot rates moved up 9 cents overnight to $3.83 a mile, the highest level in history. It's getting more expensive to move stuff. Bad news for inflation here, guys. Very bad news. This is happening despite fuel prices cooling. He's talking about, you know, in the short term, we have seen fuel prices come down from their highs of just a few weeks ago as oil prices came down from the low 100s into the high 80s. But spot rates on trucking is going up even though fuel is going down. This is reinforcing that rate inflation has been driven by supply and demand in trucking and not just diesel price pass-through. For those not following trucking closely, trucking is a commodity and prices are driven by supply and demand, like anything else is. Capacity is tightening due to the compliance crackdown, while demand is increasing due to stronger industrial sectors thanks to AI data center construction, energy investments, defense spending, and America's global industrial competitiveness. So there's a lot in that paragraph to unpack. The compliance crackdown, Craig has been on the channel before, and I interviewed him, and we talked about this several months ago. This was like middle of last year when the Trump administration really began cracking down on non-DOM CDLs, basically immigrant truck drivers who don't even speak English. There were all of these CDL mills where you just basically pay a fee, you get almost no training, and they just give you a commercial driver's license. That was causing problems on the highway, and the Trump administration has really cracked down on this. That has limited the number of available trucks on the road. So that's a big driver here on top of diesel prices. He's also talking about AI data center construction, right? Everything that goes into a data center, every piece of equipment that builds it, it all gets somewhere on a truck. So the trucks are carrying it there. That's adding to it. Energy investments. I'm sure there's a lot of drilled uncompleted wells that are getting filled right now. So you probably got more trucking demand in the energy sector. And of course, defense spending and America's global industrial competitiveness, maybe just a little bit of reshoring of manufacturing. And you can see this is over the last month or so, truck rates have really exploded higher. Meanwhile, NVIDIA jumps into PCs with a new ARM-based chip debuting in laptops from Microsoft, Dell, and HP. Look, I don't want to spend too much time on this one, guys. NVIDIA's, we've got the chip story here. Some of the software names are rallying. They're bouncing off of their lows. You've got AMD is down. Intel is down. NVIDIA is making a new laptop CPU that's all about running inference. It's all about running AI agents on local machines. That's their new chip here. Is this going to be a big driver of profitability for NVIDIA? Probably not, because NVIDIA gets 85, 90% of its revenue from data centers. So if this chip does really well, the only reason it would do well is because it cannibalizes its bread and butter, the data center business. So you got to take this with a grain of salt. NVIDIA stock not really moving that much on this. It's higher by a couple of bucks, 3.25% higher, $218, which, by the way, I'm short NVIDIA. So my NVIDIA shorts are doing about as well as my waterfront villa in the metaverse is. But that being said, Intel stock has taken a little bit of a header on this one, down about 3.8%. And AMD is down as well, currently off by 3.9% on this news. Also, this one, I highly recommend you check out this one, guys. This is from Bull Theory. Now, this is based on Michael Burry's post on his Substack over the weekend. Michael Burry just said Elon Musk and NVIDIA's deal is built on fake numbers. Burry published a detailed breakdown calling the entire structure fugazi, his word for fake. And this was Burry's Substack article over the weekend. He's alleging that billions of dollars in NVIDIA chips are being hidden off balance sheet and that American retirees are unknowingly funding the whole thing. Gee, if only somebody had been warning about that for years. NVIDIA is the world's largest AI chip company, sold $5.4 billion worth of its most advanced GPUs, the GB200, to a company called Valor. And I'll be honest with you, this is the first time I ever heard the name Valor before. And I've, in all of my research on the AI bubble, I have never come across this name. So this is very much Burry's own research here. Valor is not a real operating business. It's a special purpose vehicle, a shell company created specifically just to hold these chips and nothing else. And NVIDIA also invested $1.9 billion of its own money directly into Valor on top of the sale. So Valor bought $5.4 billion of chips from NVIDIA, $1.9 billion of which came from NVIDIA. Oh, look, round tripping. Go figure. NVIDIA just buying their own product. Isn't that amazing? If only somebody had been warning about this for years. Those 100,000 plus chips are now physically located inside XAI's data center. XAI, Elon Musk's artificial intelligence company, now part of SpaceX. That's the one that builds Grok. They're using every single one of those chips to run their AI models. But here's what Burry is flagging. Neither NVIDIA nor XAI owns the chips on paper. No, Valor owns the chips on paper, the shell company. That means that $5.4 billion of GPU assets and their associated depreciation and debt do not show up on NVIDIA's balance sheets as inventory. They also don't show up on SpaceX's balance sheets. They don't show up on XAI's balance sheets. They don't show up on XAI's balance sheets as assets. They are legally invisible to both companies. See, XAI just rents them from Valor. NVIDIA gets to book the $5.4 billion as a completed sale and record it as revenue. XAI gets full use of the chips without owning them, and the risk disappears into a shell company in the middle. Now, here's where the American retiree enters the picture. Valor needed an additional $3.5 billion in debt to fund the structure because NVIDIA only gave them $1.9 billion to buy their own product. So Apollo provided it. Oh, private credit now. Apollo, one of the largest asset managers on Earth, with $1.03 trillion in assets under management and $834 billion specifically in private credit. Apollo raised $3.5 billion, packaged it into debt securities, and sold those securities to Athene. Athene is Apollo's own insurance company. It sells fixed and indexed annuities, retirement savings products to ordinary Americans. So at the end of the day, guys, it was your retirement that paid for this. If you own an annuity with Athene or a life insurance policy, that's what's paying for this. Now, this is $5.4 billion in one case, but these special purpose vehicles, all the big tech companies are doing them now. Meta's doing it, Microsoft's doing it, Google's doing it. Just last week, we talked about how the same Apollo is out shopping around $36 billion of private credit debt now to buy Google's TPUs. All of these things that XAI is using in XAI's data center, but XAI doesn't own it. No, Valor owns it. Where did Valor get their money? Your retirement, and from NVIDIA themselves. And again, just remember, guys, nobody saw this coming. I didn't spot this Valor name specifically, but this is exactly what I've been warning about for years. It is everywhere in this bubble. And meanwhile, these imbeciles on Twitter are just like, my tech stocks, my Micron stocks. When those stocks disappear overnight and go crashing, then they'll all be looking for somebody to blame. Well, blame the pumpers. And last but not least, I got to take issue with this one I saw in Bloomberg. The Fed chair who fought back. Oh, Jerome Powell, that brave Fed chair who stood up to big bad Donald Trump. Yeah, oh, okay. They're trying to make this Jerome Powell's legacy, the man who stood up to big orange man bad. All right, look. Yeah, Jerome Powell pushed back when President Trump tried to force him to lower interest rates. Congratulations. You're supposed to push back when the president tells you to lower interest rates. That's your freaking job. What do you want, a cookie? Any idiot, any entry-level grad student would have known to do this. I don't even have any financial background. I would have pushed back on this. Anybody would have pushed back on this. That doesn't make him a hero. He doesn't go into a phone booth and change and come out with a big S on his shirt. You're supposed to do that, Jerome. You know what you're not supposed to do? Print $7 trillion and put 300 million Americans in the poorhouse with your damn money printer. All while telling us it was transitory. He's not the Fed chair who fought back. He's the Fed chair who said transitory. That's what he should be remembered for. He printed so much money. He made the whole country poor, the poorer, particularly poorer. And then when he tried to unwind it with rate hikes, he caused the second, third, and fourth largest bank failures in U.S. history. And what did he do when those banks failed? He turned the money printer right TF back on. He is not a hero. He is responsible for the everything bubble. So yeah, okay, he fought back. Congratulations. You're supposed to fight back. It's not what he's remembered for. Printing money and causing inflation is what he should be remembered for. Don't make a hero out of Jerome Powell. Anyways, guys, I just got to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the YouTube algorithm. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links are down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.